We are we're entirely used to the smartphone operating as this kind of, digital filing cabinet.
Right, yeah.
Like you need a specific tool, you open a specific drawer, you want to ride, you pull open the rideshare drawer, you want to
Right.
check your bank balance, you yank open the finance drawer. It's this highly compartmentalized system, and importantly, you are the one doing all the pulling and sorting.
Exactly. It's a strictly binary relationship. I mean, the device is either actively being manipulated by you through a screen, or it's just this dormant slab of glass and silicon resting in your pocket.
Right, just doing nothing. But looking at the stack of tech industry updates we have for you today, being April 29, 2026, that filing cabinet model is, well, effectively being dismantled overnight.
Dismantled is the right word.
We are witnessing this massive aggressive shift where artificial intelligence is breaking out of those neat little app boxes and embedding itself directly into the omnipresent core of your hardware. So, welcome to the deep dive. Our mission today is to connect the dots on how this AI transition is fundamentally changing the devices in your pocket.
And of course, exploring the billions of dollars and the existential legal battles being fought over who actually controls and secures this entire new ecosystem.
Totally, it's wild.
Setting the stage here, today date, April 29th, 2026, it really marks a structural inflection point in consumer technology. We're currently seeing peak demand for AI-specific hardware components. Like the industry is rapidly moving out of the theoretical, cloud-based phase of artificial intelligence and crashing right into the physical reality of edge computing.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because if you want a shortcut to understanding the absolute cutting edge of tech right now, you really just need to look at what Honor and OpenAI did today. Let's start with the hardware side. Honor officially launched the Magic 6 today, and its defining feature is this dedicated offline generative AI chip. It handles text generation, complex image editing, and it acts as a predictive smart assistant without requiring any Wi-Fi or cellular connection at all.
Which is huge. What's fascinating here is the sheer computing power required to make that happen. For the last few years, your phone was essentially a dumb terminal. If you asked a complex query, the phone just packaged that request, sent it to a massive server farm in the cloud, waited for the cloud's GPUs to process it, and then, downloaded the answer.
Just a middleman, basically.
Exactly, just a messenger. Moving a multi-billion parameter large language model directly onto the device, what the industry calls on-device AI, requires a massive redesign of the phone's memory architecture. You need immense memory bandwidth to feed data into the neural processing unit fast enough to generate a response locally without instantly draining your battery.
Which totally explains the price tag of this pivot. Honor hasn't just tweaked a processor here. Over the last 5 years, they've poured $10 billion into transitioning from a traditional phone manufacturer to an AI device company.
$10 billion is a massive bet.
Right. $10 billion is a war chest designed specifically to challenge Apple Intelligence and Google's Gemini Nano on a hardware level. But just as Honor is proving the hardware can handle it, we got confirmation today that OpenAI is about to completely rewrite the software experience.
Yeah, that was the bombshell. The legendary supply chain analyst Ming-Chi Kuo released a report confirming that OpenAI has officially partnered with Qualcomm and MediaTek, with the actual physical manufacturing contracted out to Luxshare to build a ground-up AI-first smartphone.
And the numbers are crazy.
Oh, the production targets are staggering. They are scaling for 300 to 400 million units a year by 2028.
And the defining feature of this OpenAI device is that it is completely app-free. Like, there is no app store, there is no grid of colorful icons on your home screen. It is driven entirely by a central AI agent.
Right, which completely changes the user paradigm.
Yeah, so imagine you are used to navigating this massive public library where you have to like hunt down specific books in different aisles just to piece together an answer to a question. That's the traditional app model. What OpenAI is building is like having a genius personal assistant who just intercepts your request and simply hands you the finished result. Sam Altman actually stated he wants this device to be quieter than an iPhone.
I love that quote, that phrase, quieter than an iPhone. Points to a drastic reduction in cognitive load. I mean, current operating systems constantly demand your attention. Through notifications, badges, and updates, they're loud. An agentic operating system, though, it intercepts your intent.
Meaning you don't do the legwork.
Exactly. You don't open an app to book a flight. You simply tell your phone you need to be in Chicago by Thursday morning. The central AI agent dynamically negotiates with the airline's backend APIs, accesses your calendar, and authenticates the payment. All in the background.
Which is amazing for us, but it totally bypasses the App Store monopoly. If the AI agent is interacting directly with APIs on the back end, the user never even sees a third-party app interface. Which means the traditional 30% cut that companies like Apple take on app purchases suddenly evaporates.
Oof, bum.
It's no wonder the market reacted the way it did today. After that coup report dropped, Qualcomm's stock shot up 13%, while Apple dropped 1.7%. The market is clearly betting that the companies building the physical AI processing chips are the new apex predators.
Well, the transition from cloud compute to edge compute requires billions of new MPUs. Qualcomm is effectively selling the picks and shovels for this localized AI gold rush.
Right, they're providing the infrastructure. But if we are shifting to these powerful localized agents that generate text, execute tasks, and mimic human interactions instantly, we have to examine the outputs of those localized models. The fidelity of AI generation has reached a point where the utility is incredible, but the structural vulnerability is terrifying.
Oh, absolutely terrifying. As the underlying models scale in parameter count and efficiency, the potential for targeted misuse scales right in lockstep with it. The barrier to entry for highly convincing synthetic media has practically vanished, which is perfectly illustrated by 11 Labs' latest expansion.
Yeah, let's get into 11 Labs. So they are an AI voice generation company currently valued at $11 billion. Today, they announced a massive expansion of their voice cloning services to 22 new languages, bringing their total to 74 supported languages globally. We're talking localized support for Korean, Ukrainian, Turkish, and multiple African languages.
And it's the speed that's the real kicker here.
Yes. The capability here is that the AI needs only a few seconds of source audio to perfectly clone a voice. With just a 3-second clip, I could generate an audio file of myself speaking fluent Turkish, maintaining my exact vocal timbre, pitch, and emotional cadence.
And the commercial applications driving that $11 billion valuation are just fast. I mean, content creators can deploy zero-shot cloning to dub their entire back catalogs into 74 languages overnight.
Wow.
Yeah, preserving their specific brand voice without relying on subtitles. Video game studios can localize massive, dialogue-heavy role-playing games simultaneously across dozens of markets without managing thousands of international voice actors. It is a massive deflationary force for global content production.
I mean, I definitely understand the commercial utility, but the vulnerability here seems insurmountable. Like, wait, if the barrier to cloning is a mere 3 seconds of audio, doesn't the convenience for a video game studio get totally outweighed by the fact that we can literally never trust our own ears again?
This is a very fair point.
Anyone who has ever posted a video to social media or even just left a basic voicemail is completely exposed to having their identity hijacked.
You are pointing out a fundamental breakdown in our verification models. We're already seeing the deployment of this technology in malicious contexts. High-fidelity deepfakes of politicians are being generated to manipulate voting blocks just hours before an election.
That's already happening, yeah.
Exactly. And in the corporate sector, CEO fraud has evolved so much. An employee receives a frantic phone call that perfectly matches their executive's voice, ordering an immediate, untraceable wire transfer. The traditional heuristic of recognizing a voice over the phone is completely obsolete.
The source material indicates that the tech industry's primary response to this is audio watermarking. But the mechanism behind that seems inherently fragile to me. If someone clones my voice to commit fraud, they aren't going to politely attach a watermark to the file, right?
Right, but the implementation of watermarking isn't voluntary for the bad actor. It's forced at the generation level. Platforms like 11 Labs are embedding inaudible cryptographic signatures directly into the synthetic audio output. They manipulate the frequency domain in a way that the human ear cannot detect, but an algorithm can read perfectly.
Okay, so the watermark is baked into the file itself.
Exactly. Crucially, these cryptographic watermarks are designed to be robust enough to survive MP3 compression, background noise addition, or even being re-encoded when uploaded to social media platforms. The goal is to build an ecosystem where web browsers and phone operating systems automatically flag audio that contains a synthetic signature.
It's just a continuous arms race, though. The local hardware generates the deepfake, the platform watermarks it, the bad actor tries to strip the watermark, and the detection algorithms have to keep evolving to catch it.
It's an endless cycle.
Right. But all of these local AI agents and all of these voice cloning platforms ultimately rely on cloud infrastructure to sync data, train newer models, and verify those cryptographic signatures. The cloud is the central nervous system connecting these local devices, which brings us to a record-breaking shift in how that nervous system is being protected.
Yeah, the attack surface has expanded so exponentially that securing the cloud infrastructure has become the single most critical priority for major tech conglomerates. This is the exact dynamic that drove the historic Google and Wiz acquisition.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Back on March 11 of this year, Google finalized a $32 billion all-cash purchase of the cloud security startup Wiz. Let's frame that number.
Yeah.
$32 billion in cash for a company founded in 2020.
Insane growth.
This is the largest acquisition in Google's 28-year history. It's the biggest cybersecurity deal ever recorded. What makes it even wilder is that Wiz actually rejected a $23 billion offer from Google in 2024.
Walking away from $23 billion requires immense clarity regarding the architectural value of your platform. They knew what they had.
They really did. To understand why Google came back with a $32 billion check, consider this analogy. Imagine Ford buys a manufacturer that has invented a revolutionary new braking system. But as part of the acquisition, Ford explicitly agrees to let that manufacturer keep selling those exact same brakes to Toyota and Honda.
Right.
Why would Google spend record-breaking capital to acquire the ultimate cloud security tool, only to allow Wiz to continue supporting Google's biggest rivals? I'm talking Amazon's AWS, Microsoft Azure, and Oracle.
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture.
Yeah.
It is a masterclass in infrastructure dominance. To understand the value, you have to understand how Wiz fundamentally changed cloud security. Older security paradigms required installing a piece of software, an agent, on every single server or virtual machine you wanted to monitor.
Which I imagine was a total headache.
It was slow, bloated, and constantly caused performance issues. Wiz pioneered an agentless approach. It uses the cloud provider's own APIs to take continuous snapshots of the entire computing environment, analyzing them out of band. It finds toxic combinations of permissions and structural blind spots across thousands of servers in minutes without touching the live workloads.
So they aren't just building taller firewalls around the perimeter. They are creating this kind of omniscient map of the entire cloud architecture to spot the open windows inside.
Exactly. And the multi-cloud strategy is exactly why Google allowed Wiz to keep supporting AWS and Azure. Enterprise companies almost never use just one cloud provider. They spread their workloads across Amazon, Microsoft, and Google to avoid vendor lock-in.
That makes total sense. Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Right. By acquiring Wiz, Google now owns the central security dashboard that enterprise chief information security officers use to monitor their entire infrastructure. Google isn't just selling cloud compute space anymore. They own the underlying security standard for the entire internet. It positions Google Cloud at the absolute center of a cybersecurity market that is scaling into the hundreds of billions as these AI deployments accelerate.
Wow, they bought the security blanket for a completely terrified enterprise market. But, you know, while the hyperscalers like Google are spending billions to lock down the invisible cloud infrastructure, delivering those AI experiences still requires physical hardware, and the manufacturing of that hardware is currently a brutal, muddy ground war defined by extreme legal exposure on one end and relentless supply chain democratization on the other.
Oh, for sure. The physical manufacturing layer is where massive R&D budgets collide with patent law and consumer price sensitivity.
And Samsung is the perfect case study for the friction at the premium end of the market right now. On April 24, a small U.S. company called Lepton Computing LLC filed a lawsuit against Samsung in a Texas federal court. They alleged that Samsung's entire line of premium folding phones, the Galaxy Z Fold, the Z Flip, and the newly announced Z Trifold, blatantly violate 9 of their patents related to folding screen technology.
9 patents is a lot to defend against.
It really is. And Lepton isn't just looking for a percentage of sales. They have requested a complete injunction. They want a total ban on all U.S. sales of Samsung's foldable devices.
Right. And it's worth noting that several prominent tech publications, including 9to5 Google, have categorized Lepton Computing as a patent troll, basically a non-practicing entity that acquires intellectual property solely to weaponize it in litigation rather than using it to manufacture physical products.
Sure, but calling them a patent troll feels like a bit of a distraction from the actual threat here. In a Texas federal court, the corporate motive doesn't really matter. All that matters is whether the patent claims actually hold up. These Texas courts are famously fast-moving and notoriously favorable to patent holders.
That's very true.
If Lepton secures an injunction, Samsung's entire foldable market share in the United States evaporates overnight. This level of legal exposure is a massive hidden cost for companies trying to innovate on form factors. And we've seen this exact leverage work before. Apple was forced to pay Nokia $2 billion back in 2018 just to settle a similar dispute and keep their products on the shelves.
The risk profile for developing ultra-premium hardware is astronomical right now. Between the R&D required to engineer flexible glass, the integration of those localized AI chips we discussed earlier, and the legal defense budgets required to survive patent litigation.
The barrier to entry at the high end is nearly insurmountable, which makes the other end of the hardware spectrum so jarring. While Samsung is fighting an existential threat over $1,000 luxury foldables, Xiaomi just launched the Redmi A7 Pro 5G in India for roughly $135.
That price point is just wild.
For $135, you get a 6.9-inch display with 120Hz refresh rate, a massive 6,300 milliamp hour battery that easily provides 2 full days of use, and Android 16 with a guaranteed 4 years of operating system updates.
The commitment to 4 years of OS updates on a sub-$150 device is a severe disruption of historical market trends. Previously, budget devices were essentially treated as disposable. Manufacturers shipped them and immediately abandoned software support, leaving users totally exposed to security vulnerabilities.
The only bottleneck on the Redmi A7 Pro is that it ships with just 4 gigabytes of RAM, so obviously heavy multitasking is going to cause some friction, and it certainly won't be running the massive on-device AI models that require 12 gigabytes of memory just to load the parameters. But a 2-day battery, a high refresh rate screen, and 5G connectivity for $135 is staggering. So what does this all mean? We are looking at a market where the premium ceiling is constrained by billion-dollar lawsuits, while the floor is rising so aggressively that flagship specs from 3 years ago are basically being given away.
It acts as an incredibly accurate market thermometer. The supply chain has optimized the production of high-end displays and massive batteries to the point of commoditization. It proves that baseline connectivity and reliable hardware longevity are no longer luxuries. The democratization of the underlying hardware is unstoppable, even as the cutting-edge features like offline generative AI and flexible displays remain locked behind immense financial and legal barriers.
It is wild to pull back and look at the entire landscape we've covered from this single day of tech updates. We started by exploring how artificial intelligence is actively breaking out of the app sandbox, fusing directly into the silicon of our phones with Honor's local chips and OpenAI's app-free agent architecture. We examine how zero-shot voice cloning from companies like 11 Labs is forcing the industry to deploy cryptographic watermarks just so we can trust audio again. We looked at how Google is locking down the vital cloud infrastructure with a $32 billion bet on agentless security scanning. And finally, we saw how the physical hardware market is being stretched to its limits between high-stakes patent injunctions in Texas and ruthless supply chain efficiency in India.
It really represents a profound structural realignment of how we interact with secure and manufacture digital technology.
The practical reality for you listening to this is that the ground is shifting beneath your digital footprint. Your next smartphone upgrade might not just feature new apps. It might eliminate the concept of apps entirely, shifting to an OS that anticipates your intent. Simultaneously, you have to cultivate an entirely new, rigorous level of skepticism for every piece of media you consume, understanding how easily reality can now be synthesized. The digital filing cabinet is gone.
This raises an important question, one that synthesizes the overarching theme of April 29, 2026. If our future devices utilize offline AI agents to flawlessly manage our digital lives without us ever needing to open a specific tool, and if platforms can perfectly clone any human voice or generate any image in mere seconds, will the primary purpose of a smartphone shift from simply connecting us to the objective real world to simulating an entirely frictionless, perfectly tailored world specifically for us?
Oh, wow. That is a staggering thought. We began this deep dive talking about the comfort of the filing cabinet, the idea that you pull up in a drawer when you want to actively engage with the world. But if the hardware is anticipating our needs, handling the complex back-end negotiations silently, and speaking to us in flawlessly synthesized familiar voices, maybe the filing cabinet hasn't been dismantled at all. Maybe we're just the ones living inside of it now. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We will catch you on the next one.